permits for different waste products that are land applied in the state of Delaware. And I took some notes as folks were up here giving their testimony on both sides. And if I could have a few minutes, I'd be happy to go through and just kind of shed, you know, the information that I believe is accurate.
It is permitted for us to get testimony from other agencies. So under that guise, you would be able to give us some information.
Okay.
Should we get it in writing? I mean, or should it, I mean,
I could follow it up.
You could get, and one of the things, and I started to say about the possibility of keeping the record open, obviously as part of that, we could get written reports from agencies too, if that's what the council opted to do.
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
You can go ahead with your...
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, there was a lot of information shared today, and I had a tough time taking down notes on everything, but if we could put the overview of the facility, groundwater monitoring well location, that could be helpful. And I just want to start off by saying Denrick's primary goal when it comes to this facility is to reduce the impacts of it to groundwater and surface water. Now, that's been done by doing many different things. Ultimately, if I know people were talking earlier about all the surface water facilities impounded, and that's true for part of the facility. However, the other part of the facility, which would be, I suppose, the top end of the map there.
Can he control that arrow?
Yeah, and he can draw on the screen if he so chooses with the pen that's on the monitor.
All right, thank you. In these areas up here, the bunkers are created to keep the compost from contacting stormwater. And if that's the case, there'll be no impact to Slaughter Creek. Over the years, there's been great improvements at the facility. It's not perfect, but it's still improving. And my observations have been, if there's any impact from the facility to Slaughter Creek, it's quite minimal at this point.
Before you go further, you were talking about what is proposed. Is that correct?
No, I'm talking about what's currently there.
What's currently there?
Yes, there's the bunkers. Basically, they're large plastic line containment structures. It's that 16-mil plastic that Mr. Blessing mentioned earlier that keeps the compost from contacting stormwater and also keeps nutrients from leaching out of the compost into groundwater. So, the primary goal, again, is to eliminate the compost from impacting surface water and groundwater. So that's been done, one, by creating the berm, impounding that water, and periodically it is removed from facility and applied onto farmland. That's done in accordance with an approval. It's not a permitted activity. Basically, I ran some calculations on the nutrient content in the compost leachate and came up with some guidelines, and provided that Mr. Blessing follows those guidelines, there should be no impact to the farm fields or the groundwater beneath them that it's applied onto.
You said if he follows the guidelines.
Correct.
Are you knowledgeable that are you having a problem with the applicants following guidelines?
What I'm saying there is it's not something that Denrick is actively looking at since the approval has been issued, but there's not a whole lot of nutrient content in that stormwater, so he can apply pretty heavy rates, but it's just with general guidelines, basically a best management practice on how to apply the stormwater.
But if I may, Mr. President, to your points, I mean, that's the part that's concerning. I mean, personally, you've heard the testimony today. I think Denrick was not necessarily given the highest of remarks from some today. To that point, when Mr. Cole just asked you the question about monitoring, I mean, I would think the biggest concern, again, from today is the environmental impact. That's your job.
Correct.
With Denrick. So, but if you're not monitoring it, how do you know? If the applicant is doing their job, and how do you know if you're doing your job if you're not monitoring it?
Well,
that's the part that I'm confused with.
The stormwater is a small piece of the big picture. That really shouldn't
be. Talk about all of that.
But the main concern is groundwater beneath the compost facility. Those groundwater monitoring wells, it was mentioned earlier, they were installed because Mr. Blessing did it voluntarily voluntarily. That's actually not correct. The department issued a notice of violation back, I think it was 2010, and we required that all the compost material be removed from the soil surface, again, thus removing the environmental impacts, removing the potential of stormwater from coming in contact with that material, and reducing, it would eliminate the leachate from that compost impacting groundwater. When those requirements were not met, the alternative in the department's notice violation was to install a network of groundwater monitoring wells sufficient to characterize groundwater beneath the facility. Those were installed, and Mr. Blessing actually installed multi-level wells, which were over and beyond what we would have required. But initially, monitoring well 3, which is located roughly where the pointer is, that did show impacts from the large curing pile that you can see in this picture here. This is probably like around 2010, possibly 11. And it was in the form of ammonia. Nitrate is complex. It's in many different forms. And a little later, I'll get into some more detail on some of the requirements folks have asked to be put in place. But you have to understand the nitrogen cycle before you can start putting requirements on a facility. And you have to understand the nitrogen cycle before you understand groundwater impacts the facility and groundwater impacts upgradient of the facility. I'll try to keep it short, but basically...
Wait, Brian, can I ask you a question first before you go into all that?
Yes.
Are you saying that that he did not follow through with the clearing of the material to put the plastic down, and he elected to go with the monitoring devices instead?
Correct. That was the alternative. It wasn't feasible at the time due just to the enormous amount of material on the soil surface.
So there's nothing under.
At the time, correct.
Is there that now?
Now all the material is off the soil surface that was over here. This material here, I'm sorry?
It's on concrete, right?
Well, this material here was sold off. There's a few bunkers. There's a bunker here, a bunker here, a bunker up here. So those are those plastic lined structures where compost is placed. So that was the evolution. We went from having all this material on the soil surface here back in 2008, 2009, 10, and over the subsequent years it was reduced, the quantity was reduced. So now this pile no longer exists. Some folks said that material hasn't been leaving the site, and that couldn't be more incorrect. A lot of material has left the site. And so this pile here is gone, and since this pile has been removed from the soil surface, Monitoring Well 3 here has shown dramatic improvements in ammonia, which is a form of nitrogen. Nitrogen is composed of organic nitrogen, ammonia, ammonium, nitrite, and nitrate. Basically how it works, just to keep it simple, compost, nitrogen is mostly in the organic form. It has to be broken down and it goes through different forms. It goes from organic to ammonia, to ammonium, to nitrite, to nitrate. Nitrate is, I've heard that term thrown around a lot today, saying that nitrate shouldn't be applied at more than 8 parts per million to the for land application. Well, I've collected many samples of the compost leachate, and essentially there's no nitrate in it. It's not in that form, so that requirement would be meaningless because you have to understand the nitrogen cycle in different forms nitrogen's in. It's been very close to detection limits, well below 1 part per million for nitrate in that compost leachate. The compost leachate, the form of nitrogen, is an organic nitrogen and ammonia. So back to the groundwater well, Monitoring Well 3 here, we want to look at the shallow level of the groundwater because that's going to show the impacts from the compost facility. Down deeper, it's more likely from upgrading impacts. So there was high ammonia in 2011 in this well here. Now it's at relatively low levels, around 10 to 30 parts per million, down from well above 100.
And who did the testing?
The testing over the years has been done by Stevens Environmental, and before that it was Duffield Associates. Upgradient, there is nitrate in the groundwater. That's most likely from upgrading agricultural activities, possibly some from Blessing's land application, possibly some from chicken houses, other agricultural operations, upgradient. It's hard to characterize that. Clearly there's impacts, But as far as Blessing's compost facility, there's minimal impacts to groundwater. And the impacts that we're seeing are right here, and they're much less than they once were, and it's in the form of ammonia nitrogen. The nitrate is very unlikely to be from the compost facility. I just want to stress that, because if folks don't understand a nitrogen cycle and groundwater and all these things that go to it, they don't understand what's happening. A few other things to clear up. This is minor. Somebody mentioned earlier that the closest home to the north was about 3,000 feet. I think that's actually closer to 2,000 feet. Let's see here. As far as violations in the past, off the top of my head, I don't know the exact numbers, but on the compost facility, it may have been more than one. I think 2 to 3 is more like it. There was the issue with an illegal discharge behind the facility in, I think it was 2010. Notice of violation was issued that I mentioned earlier that talked about removing the compost from the soil surface. And I believe there may have been an additional violation for stormwater related to the stormwater plan. There were a lot of other issues related to land application, which, as was mentioned earlier, stopped in 2015. And I believe the majority of the concerns, or as far as the odors go with the public, was from that. Now, that's not to say some of it's from the compost facility, it certainly is, but there was a lot of issues with the land application. There was problems with flies, there's problems with strong odors, and understandably so, a lot of the community was very upset. But that, at this point, thankfully, is in the past. Let's see here.
Do you have the ability to make any recommendations as we go through this process? You're an agency, a state agency, to provide us with recommendations on conditions we should apply to this application. You're familiar with the application, to make it more environmentally sensitive, and is there things that we should be looking at that you can make suggestions? Is that possible?
We can look into that, and if nothing else, we can definitely, if you have suggestions you want us to look at and
no,
see
you're
if
the
makes sense.
No, you're the experts in the environment. I'm not.
Right.
Okay, I want you to tell us, after what you've heard and what you're and you're knowledgeable of this location, what you would recommend that as we go into the future that things will be better when it comes to the odor and to contamination here or whatever.
My opinion would be that at this point the facility has minimal impacts to groundwater,
mm-hmm.
minimal impacts to surface water and Slaughter Creek. So my opinion is that the main concern should be the odors.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily my expertise. One of the recommendations made at the previous meeting, the zoning and planning meeting, was reduce odors by 90%. 90% of what?
Is there anybody at Department of Natural Resources that has a nose that we could send out there to smell any of that stuff and come up with some recommendations? Anybody in that department? No?
No. Now,
just asking.
And also in regards to the odors, when Mr. Blessing was actively composting the hatchery waste, some of the other materials that were previously composted, the odors were extremely strong from the compost facility.
Can you give recommendations on what he should be composting and what he should not?
Well, at this point, the only thing he should be composting is that Mount Air material and possibly that Purdue material that we talked about earlier, mixing it in with the current stockpiles on site. So under the agreement and secretary's order and the supplemental approvals, which would be that Mount Air material and the Purdue material, those are the only things he's allowed.
And that's in some kind of official permit?
It's in letters that if you do not have them, I can get them to you. Actually, I can get
Well, shouldn't it be part of a DENREC permit, maybe, of what should be processed on that?
It's part of the agreement secretary's order. Well, it's a long history, but there's
agreement
secretary's order, and then these supplemental approvals work in conjunction with the agreement secretary's order, allowing him to bring limited quantities of certain materials to mix in with the compost. The reason to mix the materials in with the compost are twofold. One is, yes, it does increase the nitrogen content of the material, but from the department's interest, the main reason for that is that pre-compost material, the large mountain as it's being referred to mm-hmm. today, that material is a mixture. And it's no secret, yes, there was biosolids, sewage sludge in there. He was permitted to take
still
that.
Still in there?
It's still in there.
Okay.
It's a small percentage of what's in there, but the department's not confident as to exactly where it was in that pile. So we don't care if it was a dump truck load or 100 dump truck loads. It's in there. We consider the whole thing as containing biosolids. There's dead chickens in there. There was an issue many years ago, about 5 years ago, where there was heavy snowstorms, a bunch of chicken houses had roofs that collapsed. Lots of chickens had to be essentially put down. Mr. Blessing took those chickens, which actually did the Department of Agriculture a favor at the time, and he composted many thousands of chickens.
In Sussex County, we'd say that was a blessing for him to do.
Yes. So, I mean, it's not a big secret that it was all laid out. All the materials he took, at least that we're aware of, were laid out in the permit. All the materials were sampled in accordance with DENRIC and EPA requirements. We looked at metals, which are very minimal, but anytime you deal with biosolids, you look at metals. But back to the pile here. What was I saying? The second component as to why that Mount Airy material is important is because this pile was never monitored for temperature requirements. There's pathogen reduction requirements as part of state and federal regulations anytime biosolids are composted. And it has to be documented that that's done properly. This pile, I have no doubt, has achieved high temperatures for years. It's actively hot in the middle of that pile. Even just you dig down a foot or two, it's hot in there. So as far as a pathogen concern for biosolids, no, there shouldn't be a concern. That being said, it has to be documented. And it hasn't been documented to date because it was all in this one large pile. So what he's doing is he's taking small parts of this pile out, putting it on the cleared section of the pad here, blending in that Mount Airy material, and then monitoring it for the temperature requirements so that he can then sell it and distribute it from the facility. I think that's an important point some folks didn't understand.
So they would be buying human waste at that point?
There's a small percentage of it in there, but that's not that uncommon. Human waste is spread on farm fields all throughout the state. That's a normal practice.
Where?
Kent County, Sussex County, and I'm
hearing Baxter's are spreading it, right? Mm-hmm. Aren't they ever? Yeah, Baxter's spread a
lot.
That's
a spray irrigation system.
No, that's not my job.
It's not being tilled into
biosolids.
It's not biosolids being tilled into the land.
My job is to permit facilities that produce Class A or Class B biosolids. Class A is the highest standard. That's what Mr. Blessing's compost ultimately is. Kent County, all the sewage sludge from Kent County is land applied. Lime is added to it after it's pasteurized. Farmers take it and apply it to their land.
We do that here.
Hundreds of acres, thousands of acres from Kent County take the material. Sussex County, you guys produce your own Class A biosolids material that's spread throughout Sussex County. It's a common practice, and there's a stigma associated with it. I understand that. But if the appropriate procedures are followed, if the appropriate samples are collected, and things are done the way they should be, it's not considered based on the information we have from the EPA. We rely on them for our standards and such that we work with. Provided that it's all met, it shouldn't be concern to human health and the environment. So back to this pile here, yes, it does have some biosolids in it. I can't tell you where they are. I can't tell you how thoroughly mixed it's throughout it or if it's just in one portion or another, but a small percentage of that pile does have biosolids in it.
Do you take samples? I mean, it was mentioned earlier about taking samples of these piles so somebody knows what's in them and it's confirmed and verified. Do you, as DENREC, as the authority?
DENREC does not actually take the samples, no. As the material came on site, it was sampled if it was biosolids, and then when the product leaves periodically, samples are taken of that material to look for certain parameters in addition to, you know, maintaining those temperature logs that we were talking about before to ensure pathogen reduction occurs. But no, to answer your question, the department is not taking those samples.
Should they consider it?
The department isn't in a position to really do that. That's not the way things.
I ask because I mean there's parameters as you've specified what they're permitted, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, how do you verify that they're complying with what you've said?
Mr. Blessing collects samples and sends them to independent laboratories, and then we review the results.
I mean,
they were.
I mean,
It's the way you do it.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's the way it's done. And, you know, looking at certain parameters.
His rules, he just follows.
Looking at the parameters, though, in the data, there's things that you can look at to know if it's likely his compost or not, like the carbon to nitrogen ratio. There's some other things we can look at in their percent solids. But no, there's an element of
trust.
And, you know, if for some reason a facility was caught faking results, there'd be huge repercussions to that. But that's the way the program works, and that's standard.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Churchill, what has taken so long? If you're getting two trucks a day of the chicken converted, whatever you're getting, mm-hmm. right, and you got that mound there, mm-hmm. Why can't we just get rid of it and get ground zero real quick?
Well, ultimately, Mr. Blessing, you know, it's his facility, and that's how he makes his living. And there's a limited market to it in that.
If it's done all over Kent and Sussex County, well, goddamn, we're right in the middle.
Again, it's his materials used on some farm fields, like you said, in New Jersey. It's used on, I think, some golf courses, highway projects and such. But, you know, he's selling this material. So if he was just to give it away, yeah, I suppose the pile could go away pretty quickly. But as long as the environmental impacts are minimized, which has happened and there's been great improvements over the years, it's not really the department's position to tell him he has to give his material away. As long as his facility is not impacting the environment, that's our main concern. The secondary concern being odors. And my personal observations, I go down to the site regularly, on average maybe once a month. I'm not out there 24 hours a day, so I can't claim to know any time the material smells, and I probably don't know it as well as some of the people in the surrounding community. That being said, now that the material's been sitting there for several years, there's much less odor to it than there once was. Definitely still has an odor. I could definitely still say on some days it could be upsetting to folks, but...
So you've been there when it's been pretty bad?
Absolutely.
So it is pretty bad?
It can be, but it's not as bad as it once was. But yes, there's definitely odors to it. Absolutely.
If I may, have you seen the photos that we presented today?
Most of them.
You have. So, I mean, it was mentioned... as evidenced by the photos. I mean, again, I'm not a scientist, okay? We're seeing the gravity of the photos and the largeness of the piles, and I mean, and it appeared that some of the waters, you know, had some alterations to them. Not clear, not as pretty as you would think. I mean, can you attest to what that is, and is this affecting that?
I'm sorry, attest to what was...
The discoloration of the waters. Everett, do you have those photos?
They're just claiming there's runoff.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as evidenced by these photos that we were submitted today. So I'm number one, wanted to know if you, as DENREC, have seen these photos. And number two is, could you comment on them? And maybe I can pull out the ones that I'm thinking of in my own mind.
Do you typically go out and check the berms and check other things at the site, or do you just check the monitor wells and move on?
I don't check the monitor wells. I just review the results. But when I go out to the facility, yeah, I will look at the berm. There's no reason for that to really be compromised in any way. It's been there for many years, and it's pretty robust. But I'll go out, you know, look to see if there's any issues with flies.
Okay.
Look to see if there's any issues with stormwater leaving the facility that would have nutrient content to it. Stormwater may have come in contact with the compost material, things of that nature.
So real quick, I'm sorry. So here's just two. I mean, these are two that are part of the record now. And again, I don't know what I'm looking at. But what I can see is there's water, and then there's something going on over here.
Okay.
And then there's obviously this, which appears to, you know, not be normal.
Okay.
I don't know if it is normal or not. Well, you would be the expert, so could you see those? And then
the first picture here is looking at the so-called mountain or the pre-compost pile. And what you're seeing, this black liquid here, is impounded water between the pre-compost pile and the berm. Now, periodically, that water is pumped out and surface applied on surrounding farm fields.
So this water here, it doesn't appear to be impacting the groundwater. There's a monitoring well about 30 feet or so away from that. And that's where, that's essentially at this point keeping the water from reaching Slaughter Creek. No, it's not the best, it's not what we'd like to see long term. Ultimately, you know, if these improvements get put in place and he has the, if he reduces the amount of material and the remaining materials undercover, we won't have these areas of stormwater like this collecting that are impounded. But at this point, this is a temporary solution. It's minimizing the impact of the facility to Slaughter Creek, and it doesn't appear to be impacting groundwater because essentially the nutrient content in that water is pretty low, and not much of it infiltrates into groundwater, or so it appears.
Okay.
Now, the second picture appears to be at the Draper Road Bridge. And the best I can tell, you know, the water level is pretty low. There's some algae on the surface. As we've talked about earlier, the quality of that stream, that creek, is poor. Down gradient at the site, it's routinely, you know, 10 to 15 parts per million for nitrate. Anything above 3 to 5 parts per million is considered impaired, really anything above 3. So that's not good. It's also impaired upstream of the facility. Now, one shortcoming of the upstream and downstream sampling is the upstream sample is about a mile. Should I go back?
Sure.
It's about a mile upstream of the compost facility. So you have a large land area there between his compost facility where an upstream sample is collected. So the way when you sample a stream, it's done typically at base flow. And somewhere around statistics I've seen, 70% of that water in the stream during base flow is from groundwater. Groundwater is coming up into the stream and supplying that stream with the water. Obviously, when there's a stormwater event, you have a lot more water in the stream, and that's mostly from surface water. But when it's at base flow, it's from groundwater. So what you're seeing in those samples is clearly downstream there is impacts from most likely agriculture to the stream. It's not really showing much in regards to Blessing's facility. Again, there appears to be minimal impacts from his facility to groundwater. We can see that from the monitoring wells. The little bit of impact we're seeing is around monitoring well 3 there. That's not what's going to cause a stream to raise by, you know, 5 to 10 parts per million. One other thing while I'm thinking about it I can touch on, I did just get new groundwater results that were mentioned earlier today. I just got those this morning, and the spread wasn't as significant as was mentioned earlier. The downstream sample was 12.4, and the upstream was 4.6. Still not good, very impaired stream. That's definitely a concern, but I don't believe that's from Blessing's compost facility. I believe that's from agricultural activities surrounding the stream in that mile or so area. It's a large area that's impacting that upstream versus downstream sample.
So you think that air quality, the water quality is not attributed to this? You think it's majority, mostly based on surrounding agriculture?
Certainly the majority. Is there any impact? There's probably some impact, but quite small in the overall scheme of things. I don't think it would even be a blip in those readings, in those measurements. I won't go on too long here. So those were a couple of the things that I took notes on during Mr. Blessing's presentation. Now, I had a few others I wanted to go into detail on the opposition, and there's a lot of talk about the bond and the $250,000, and essentially based on the financial analysis that was done by a different section of DENREC, Mr. Blessing, based on his tax returns, does not have the financial ability to afford a $250,000 bond. The minimum amount required by department regulations is $10,000. And the agreement and secretary's order, which I do not have in front of me, but I'm pretty sure the 2014 one, if not also the 2012 agreement and secretary's order, had language in there saying he had to get the
largest bond in place, up to $250,000 that he could essentially afford based on this financial assessment, with an absolute minimum of $10,000 because that's the minimum amount required by regulation. So that's where we're at.
Go ahead, IG.
So if you're bonding for contamination, right, cleanup, what difference does it make what the financial, I mean, because the essentially you bond to build the clubhouse and prepare the roads, and, you know, if you're just bonding based on a financial situation, that doesn't add to the cleanup. You don't say, well, I only got $10,000 worth here, so I'll just clean this pile up. You got a whole lot of problems. I mean, I don't understand the math.
Well, at the end of the day, if the money's not there, you know, our hands are kind of tied. You know, what's the alternative? You know, ultimately, this product needs to be removed from the facility. Over time, he's been reducing stockpiles, and I know some folks mentioned earlier that, you know, material hasn't been leaving the site, but, you know, from 2012 to 2016, about 40,000 tons of compost was sold. There was about 9,000 tons of the Mount Air material brought in 2015 and 2016, and then a little over 50,000 tons were actually sold between 2012 and 2016. The Mount Air material didn't start coming on the facility until 2015.
But so, my question was really about the bond.
There's nothing more we can do at this point. You know, he can't afford a larger bond amount, so our hands are kind of tied. That's what the agreement and secretary's order required as a minimum amount. And at this point, we're working with Mr. Blessing to eliminate stockpiles to the facility and reduce the impact of it to the environment and the surrounding community.
Apparently, that's their regulation. It's very similar to a criminal bond when the judge would look at, you know, whether or not someone stays out of jail. They look at financial factors, but it's very different than the county looks at bonding for developments, for example, because the county looks at it from the standpoint, is the bonding sufficient to clean up, like you said, or finish a project? So it's a very different standard that DENREC apparently has than what the county does.
We would have liked to have a larger bond in place, yes.
Yeah, but
the bond ought to be based on just what's needed.
That's right.
Period.
But if you can't afford it, then
we're not DENREC, but I mean, in the end, is there not thinking, if one cannot afford to do the bond, i.e. be responsible for the business that they're running, then therefore you don't give a permit?
We're under this agreement, secretary's orders, an interim measure to reduce these stockpiles and get the facility in a position where it could be under a permit in the future, and to, you know, work through these issues and concerns.
So the other question I would have is, and again, we're not DENREC, so you guys have your own battles to fight, and I get that. But I have another question, and that is, do you in your permitting process require the applicant to be in good standing with the county?
If the county was to deny...
And let me ask you another way, because obviously I'm still concerned with the fact that we provided a violation 5 years ago. We have to talk internally about how to resolve that. That's a separate topic. But do you double check to ensure that the applicant has done all the things that they need to do as it relates to a land use first before you give a permit? Just like, let's reverse the roles, because when we do land use decisions, it's contingent upon, quote unquote, DLDOT and DENREC signing off on what they're responsible for, because if that's not done, then it doesn't happen. Is that correct? So we do it on our end. Do you do it on your end?
As I could recreate it, back in 2005, when the facility was originally permitted through DENREC, this is before I was in the program, but there was basically a permit application that was submitted. In there was a printout from Sussex County's webpage, and it had the facility, the parcel outlined in yellow as agricultural residential one. No, I'm sorry, let me back up. In 2005, all the information that it had was, I don't have it in front of me. It said basically land use commercial. That's all it said back then. And I believe what happened is my predecessor looked at that and, you know, we're not zoning experts, assumed that it was okay. I could be wrong. I don't know. In 2010, another permit application, a revised one, was sent in. The same information was included. The county's webpage, I don't know if it was updated or not, if it was the original submission again. But in 2011, the county updated its webpage, and then it had the agricultural residential one, and it still had, I think, the land use or land type, but please don't quote me on that, but it said commercial still. So they added an additional field into that. So I don't know why it was approved. It is something we look at. It's something that should have been picked up on, but my best guess is that my predecessor may have thought that it was in compliance with county requirements, and clearly that's not the case.
Is that something that you can go back to your bosses and your supervisors and offer that as a suggestion, just as we do in our land use plans? Is it something that you guys can implement? And I'm not a big government guy. At the same time, we all have to play in the sandbox and we all have to play by the rules. And so, you know, I like less regulations and not more regulations. At the same time, the reality is, if somebody's not in compliance, then why do you permit them the authority to move forward with a permit? That's the part that I'm not understanding. I guess it's just it's how you do business.
I don't know if I'm understanding the question. If it's why we allow them to continue to operate.
In other words, you're giving them the authority to move forward with your permit, not knowing with certainty that they're in compliance with a land use plan. It's like me going to DMV and registering my car without proof of insurance. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen.
Well, we weren't.
I have to provide proof of insurance before I can get my car registered.
We weren't aware of this issue until I think it was late 2016, and at this point, we're just waiting to see through this process what the county does. If it's approved, then okay, it's approved. If it's not approved, well, then we have some discussions that have to be made as to how we move forward.
But is it okay? I mean, it's something that's beyond yourself, and I apologize. But and I know that. But as a suggestion, one might want to consider looking into that. That's all.
Yeah. That's fair. A few more items. It was mentioned that it only takes 3 to 6 months to compost. Maybe you can compost material in 3 to 6 months, but to actually get it so it's a quality sellable product, it's going to take most likely more time than that. You have to get the carbon and nitrogen ratio so that the material can be utilized for its particular end uses. So that's not gospel. 3 to 6 months is on the short end. More likely it's going to take a year or so to produce the kind of compost that Mr. Blessing does. Somebody mentioned earlier there's data from Prime Hook, and that there was, I think it was Enterococcus, was the concern. I don't think it's fair to draw a conclusion that's from Mr. Blessing's facility. There's plenty of other sources, potential sources of Enterococcus. Could be from geese, deer, whatever there is. There's lots of inputs of Enterococcus into a stream that are likely besides Mr. Blessing's facility. FOIA requests were brought up earlier. I actually met with Ms. Payan, file size, more like this. I understood her concerns. I actually went down and sat down with Ms. Payan for several hours, and I went through page by page, showed her what different things are in the file. So we've been open with our FOIA process as far as I'm aware, and she actually thanked me for my efforts when I was done with her. The dead trees that were brought up along Slaughter Creek in this general area here between the Codds Road Bridge and Mr. Blessing's facility, most likely saltwater intrusion. It's not, I think I came in, I had left the room for a minute, but I understand it's an eyesore now, but that's most likely why there's a bunch of dead trees there, is saltwater intrusion. I touched on the materials in the compost. Again, it's not a big secret. Yes, there is some sewage sludge in there. There's chicken, there's hatchery waste. It's not a secret. Let's see, anything else? One last thing, It was mentioned that DENREC had corresponded with, it wasn't the Deputy Attorney General, that wasn't the term that was used, but essentially I can't recall the term that was used. But yes,
I think it's the Department of Justice.
Department of Justice, yes. It's standard practice for DENREC when we're working on possible enforcement items or sites that have concerns that are widespread or could be just big projects like this, that we consult with a Deputy Attorney General in our process forward to make sure we're following procedure as we should. I don't think there's really a whole lot to read into that. That's not unusual. That's all I really had based on the notes I took during today's testimony, but if you folks have any more questions, go ahead and ask.
Any questions? Mr. Burton?
One and Mr. There was a facility shut down in Newcastle County.
I'm sorry.
There was a facility that was shut down by DENREC in Newcastle County. Mm. Does it at all relate to this facility?
The Peninsula Composting Facility? Yeah. No. That facility was actually handled by a different section of DENREC. The way it works is if there's biosolids in it, it falls in my program. If there's no biosolids, it falls under the solid and hazardous waste section of DENREC. Bruce is no longer taking biosolids into his facility, but because there's still material there that had contained biosolids, it's still mixed in there, it still falls under this program. But to answer your question, no, the Peninsula facility was handled by a different section of DENREC.
Even though there's biosolids?
There was no biosolids in the Peninsula site.
Okay. All right, then I have one question for the Vermont guy.
We don't normally bring people back up, but sure.
Right.
You just tell me how, if everything gets done in this facility, what are we looking at expense-wise? If the whole dream comes true.
The seven proposed structures?
All of it.
They're probably in the range, we haven't done final design, but I would put a broad range of $300,000 to $600,000 per structure, and there's a number of factors that go into that wide range. So two million to $4 million, roughly. Very ballpark. So that's a coarse answer, sir.
Very good. Thank
okay.
you.
Any more questions from council? Thank you, sir.
Thank you for staying too.
Yes, appreciate it.
Yeah. Overtime.
If it's okay now, then we will close the public hearing.
Yes.
I assume there's some thought to leave the public record open for a period of time for whatever you want to.
Yeah, why don't we just leave it open-ended for a week and maybe we can fine-tune it next week, because I am kind of brain dead at this point.
Well, there's no council meeting next week.
Well, then the next, we leave it open until the next council meeting, and then staff can come back with some possible, maybe you could think up with some things we should be asking or challenging us with a.
I think we should do that. If we're going to leave it open, we should leave it open for, and we'll say 15 days for public additional comment. That 15-day period stops, comments are done, either it must be all but be in writing, mm-hmm. and then we've got to allow so many days for either side to respond to those comments, and then time for council to ask questions of staff or whoever else.
Okay. Staff or agencies is what, typically we've kept it open for a 15-day period, as you indicated, has to be in writing by a certain date, close business 4:30 on a certain date, and then for a 15-day period for either side to respond what the other has done, and then after that, possibly another 15 days for council to come up with questions they ask agencies, and at that point, we could further expand when we get the response.
I assume that we should have a motion for that.
Yes, we should.
My recommendation would be we leave it open for 15 days from today's date. I guess somebody can do the math on that, whoever. And it'd be at 4:30, close the business that day. Then from that point in time, enough forward 15 more days for either side to respond to what's been presented.
Yes.
There's a time limit on that. Janelle, I guess you can. It's 15 days from that by time thing.
Yes.
And then we leave them for 15 more days for council to ask any questions of staff and or agencies.
Yes. I'll make that motion. We
defer and leave the record open as explained by the president, El Presidente.
El President. Do you have a second for that?
I'll second.
Second, Mr. Arlett. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Burton.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Now entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and second.
Triple.
To adjourn. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote. Mr. Arlett.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
We're adjourned. Thank you all very much for your patience.